Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your recap episode for this week's Zurich Classic. And joining me to break it all down is Jacob's keyboard that I can hear already. And Greg Ducharme is here. What up,
wow.
Greg?
Shots fired early. I'm a little bit bummed out today, in all honesty, for a couple of reasons. We'll get into all of them. I'm happy in some ways. I enjoyed watching the tournament. I'm bummed out in other ways. One of the reasons I'm happy is KP is here. I feel like KP and I haven't had a chance to catch up in quite a long time. So I'm excited for tonight.
That right there is Kyle Porter. KP, it's Oscar night. Hey, buddy.
I realized that like 20 minutes ago. Oscars is not high on my list of priorities. I did see somebody in the comments is already just popping off about, hey, where's KP talking about Spieth for 50 minutes? Listen, if you want 50 minutes of Spieth, me and Craig can do 150 minutes, whatever you want.
Yeah, you go Jordan.
Yeah, I don't know why we would considering the Zurich just happened, but I think it's a shot at my ability to shoehorn Spieth in any way possible, which I've already done 2 minutes into the show. So there you go.
A skill set like,
golly,
there it is. A skill set like no other that Kyle possesses. Jacob, stay close to that drop button here. We had a playoff to determine the winner of the Zurich Classic. And before we get into all that, Greg, this very quickly on Sunday, it turned into a two-horse race. It was the Aussies. It was the South Africans. That's Leishman-Smith. It's Oosthuizen and it's Schwartzel. Those were really, for the vast majority of Sunday, the only two teams that were really in this thing. Do you agree with that statement?
Yeah. I mean, you had Keith Mitchell and Brandt Snedeker making a little move, but it felt like they were so far ahead, and it had that feeling all day long. And especially when you saw the luck that Tony Finau and Cameron Champ had at number two, and then I think it happened again at number four and number seven, where they were just up against the lip of the bunker for the entire first nine, and then we didn't see him again. So that was a difficult start for them, and they kind of ejected early, and you're left with a two-horse race, which was cool to see, honestly. I mean, I don't mind seeing a runaway like that, even though they were only one shot ahead of the posted score. I think it was Snedeker and Mitchell. So anyway, yeah, I agree with you, Rick. It was definitely a two-horse race.
So I thought it was cool because it was like a more volatile version of match play, right? Like if you're up three holes with five to go or whatever in match play, it's kind of over. There's not a ton to see, but if you're up two or three strokes with five to go in this format, it's not over. You know, like we saw a bunch of different lead changes, and you also saw both teams up by two or more. I guess they were both up two on multiple holes. And I think multiple holes on like the final 12. So I thought in that sense, it was actually everybody throws out like the match play thing. It was actually more fun than match play because there was more going on, especially over that last like 90 minutes or so.
So and they were the same group, which helps.
That was awesome.
For sure.
That was the best part. And then when we got to the playoff, it was, they could just like, we didn't have to worry about, oh, this guy's been sitting around for an hour. What's he been up to? It was like, just go right back out there. So we would normally take this kind of team by team, but because they were all playing together, because it was a two horse race, let's kind of do this towards the end here, because Greg, one of the signature moments for the Australians was number 16, Cam Smith. This is that really short par four, played about 302 yards. On Sunday, Cam Smith steps up there, hits what was a pretty good drive, probably where he was trying to hit it, maybe a little farther left, and it bounces essentially right in front of the green and crosses into the water right there, which means that Leishman did the pro thing, took an absolute pro drop right up there, gets the place's ball, and then eventually chips it in for birdie. That hole is probably that felt like the momentum for them. Now, little did I know they were going to give it back a hole later, but like that felt like it was going to spark them to victory.
It did. I would say all day, Rick, they were team short game, right? They were, you saw Leishman with a couple of really nice chip and runs throughout the week. You saw Cam Smith with a couple of nice shots, and on greens like that, that were at times purple. I mean, those greens were as firm, they were really browned out, really firm. You could tell that they were not easy, and those guys got up and down from all over the place. So some really nice chip and run, some creative shots, and you could kind of see it. It almost looked like a Royal Melbourne kind of scenario in the sand belt, where you had some really firm running brown greens, which was cool to see. And I think it benefited that team for sure, because their short game was great all week. And then that one goes in and it's a little bit of an exclamation point on it. And it swings the momentum to Kyle's match play point so significantly, because Louis doesn't hit it in the water off the tee. He hits it over the green, and then Charles kind of hits that chip shot that's not really, he kind of stuffs it in the ground a little bit, and it comes up well short, and birdie, they have a much longer birdie putt than you would hope for, but they're kind of thinking they're going to win the hole if you do equate it to match play directly. And then an instant later, all of a sudden they lose the hole, let alone tie, and everything flipped. So I agree with you, Rick. It was definitely a momentum shifter.
Do you guys think, I was thinking about this, do you guys buy into the, oh, they are comfortable with each other, and they like, sometimes we do this narrative thing where it's like, okay, like that's, we're overstating how like the importance of it. But this week, like especially on Sunday, it felt like a little bit of a real thing. How much do you guys buy into that? Like, how much of a thing is that?
I think it's a thing. I think it's, I mean, first of all, it helps that our top two teams here are guys that are very comfortable with one another. But there was a comment that was made at some point on the broadcast where there's a difference in expecting your partner to hit the best possible shot, and that you need to expect your partner to almost hit the worst possible shot, which I think is kind of an interesting way to look at it. And when you play with someone as often as you do, you kind of know what their good shots are, what their bad shots are, what you can expect for the next one. I think it is a big deal, especially in the alternate shot portion.
I agree, Rick. The alternate shot portion, you're right on. Because in better ball, you can go Spieth, Reed and compete against each other. And you don't have to like each other at all. You can do your own thing. You can go through your own routine. You can do everything exactly the way you normally do it. And all that happens is if you don't make a birdie and your partner does, you get credit for it. So it's all positives in better ball. But when you get to alternate shot, you're relying on each other. And in a situation where you're laying up on a par five, you got to have a conversation. Hey, where do you want me to, what works for you here? Where do you want me to leave this? I think back to Phil Mickelson and Keegan Bradley when they played together in the President's Cup. And Phil said to Keegan, I don't care where you hit it. I don't care where it goes. Just get me a wedge. And that says, hey, it makes Keegan's decision-making so easy. I'm just going to hit driver everywhere, get it as close as I can so Phil can utilize a wedge. When you're comfortable and familiar with each other and you know each other, you hit every shot knowing that it's all going to be okay. Two, this isn't going to be the last time that we play together. And three, I know what my partner wants here. So I can try my best to execute that. And I do think it's a big help in alternate shot.
We stepped on 18T in regulation, all tied up. Both teams would go on to make par. and we would go immediately to a playoff. And KP, for those who weren't listening, the playoff whole schedule was it play at 18 in alternate shot, then you would play 18 again best ball, then you would play 9 alternate shot, then play 9 again in best ball, which I was like, yes, please give me some of that. I want to watch that. We didn't get to see it, but how did you feel about that being the structure for how this win was going to be determined?
Well, two things. One, did you see Ustazen's face when they explained it to him?
He had no, he was like, it's still, he was just that, right?
He was just like staring at them. Like I just, is it my turn yet? Like, can I hit? And then the other thing is I had forgotten they removed, remember how they used to like turn over like a car or like a John Deere tractor, or like maybe they would turn over like a I don't know, like an insurance building for Zurich, like a tower or a, I don't know, whatever, to determine who goes first. This time it was first in, or what was it, first in, last out,
first in, last out, right?
But he still screwed that up too, because he was like, it's first in, last out, but then he said, and you guys were first on the tee sheet, which that's not right. It's who actually puts the ball
right,
in the cup
first in.
But I think it is right, because, and I've been doing this 8 years and I can't figure it out, but I think it is right, because when you're in the same group or in the same pairing, it's whoever teed off first. So first in, last out is only it.
Interesting.
It makes it up if you're in different pairing. Is that right, Greg?
It's not who. Yeah, I think you're right. It's not who hold out first, who is literally in the hole first. It's who teed off first, which I believe that's what it is.
Why is this?
And this kind of confirms.
it's like, this is normal sport. My tweet in like the manifestation of it. It's first in, last out, unless you're in the same pairing, in which case it's whoever hit the first tee shot.
Right. We are literally just determining who goes first. It's not that big a deal. Like, draw a straw or just somebody go. It doesn't matter. It's
they should have flipped Louis' caddy or something, like, as like heads or tails. On this real quick, did it feel like Louis hit like before the official was off the tee box?
Well, that's what we were saying before we went hot, Greg. I mean, it was like by the time he was done describing who goes first, Louis was in his backswing, is what it felt like. And
there was no practice swing. He was just ready to go. And I'm a huge Louis fan. I love Louis Oosthuizen. I think he's
a lot.
So we've heard.
Yeah. He's one of those guys I would like to be. If you look at PGA Tour players, there are some of them that you'd like to be, some of them that you wouldn't like to be. Like, I wouldn't want to be Tiger Woods. I think that, like, you can't go anywhere without being recognized. I wouldn't want all of that goes along with being Tiger Woods. But Louis Oosthuizen, to be him would be awesome. And hold on.
He's won one time on the tour.
He won the Open Championship.
That's true, at St. Andrews. So that's like winning, I don't know, 7 Valspars.
He,
I don't know,
very nearly. This is dangerous without Rick here, just you and I. But anyway,
yeah, this is first cut after dark right here.
Yeah, he's got plenty of crystal from Augusta National. There's a jacket that he really came close to getting, which is disappointing. But besides the fact, the guy is always around, always contends. He doesn't seem to care too much where it really stings him. It doesn't bother him. It doesn't affect his personal life afterwards. And the golf swing is just so sweet. It makes you feel like that's something that I want. Let's just leave it at that. So I think he's really cool. And also, if you go out to a restaurant and you go out in public, nobody recognizes Louis. He's not the guy that everybody is looking for an autograph from. He's not going to be bothered. People aren't looking for interviews from him all the time. So things are easy going for Louis, and I think that's great.
I think that's pretty interesting. I could actually probably be talked into it. Real quick, what do you think Louis' career earnings are? I just looked it up. So all tours, I would guess, combined.
All tours combined. I was going to guess like 38 on the PGA Tour.
Ooh. That's a very, very good guess. It's 36 and a half.
PGA Tour. Oh.
No, well, to everything.
Oh, everything. So, okay. Yeah. So I meant everything. Yeah, yeah. I was guessing 38 everything.
I can't think of another guy. I kind of want to talk about this question because I think it's interesting. Like, who would you like to be? Because you definitely don't want to be Tiger. I think even being like somebody like a Rory or a Spieth would be hard. Like, it would just like they there's a lot of perks, obviously, like, you know, all the things that you would think about a professional athlete at that level, the money, the flying price, all this different stuff.
Right.
But there's such a, there's such a weight to it, right? Like there's just a lot, like you have a lot of people wanting stuff from you all the time.
If you shoot 82, you are still answering questions in the media tent, right? You're constantly under pressure, under fire. You're held accountable for almost every shot you hit. Whereas if you're a Louis or Charles in this category too, if you go shoot 82, nobody talks to you. You go home. You're done. You can, you know, be frustrated on your own, but you don't have to answer to anything. And at the same time, if you shoot 62, you get some talk. Whereas if you're Tiger, either way, you're swarmed. It doesn't matter what you do. You're swarmed. Mm-hmm. There's no just going home after a round, which I think is hard.
So let me throw two names at you that I think I might like to be for different reasons. Webb. Do you think Webb gets recognized?
In probably in North Carolina. Yeah. Probably places where if Webb is at home and he goes out to a local restaurant, I would bet you. Yeah. I would say not too much. General world, I would say not too much.
And then the other one, and this might be, I think I might choose this guy, but it's hard because he's so young that, it's difficult to kind of project how famous he will eventually be, but Colin Morikawa.
Yeah, it is another good one.
Because I don't think he gets recognized, and I want the swing. He's already won a major at 24.
Nice to have. He's catching up on Louis with his career earnings. He's catching up on Louis already.
He's already had a more. He's got four times as many tour wins as Louis does.
Yeah,
which is tough for your you know, dream scenario here. Well, we're still talking about this, Rick. Welcome back to the podcast.
I have literally had zero internet issues in my entire life except the last two nights on the First Cut podcast. It's unbelievable.
Rick, this is actually a good thing for you because it highlights what this last couple of minutes in is. It highlights the need for Rick Gabe.
This is job security for me.
All right, listen. We're deep on Louis's Yahoo page right now, which is just kind of tough. Who would you pick? Who would you be?
I could be anybody.
Yeah.
I was actually flipping through the official world golf rankings. Morikawa would be a good one. Daniel Berger, I feel like, is pretty good.
Yeah. I feel like Greg half picked Louis because of his swing and half because of everything else. Or three quarters.
Oh, no, the swing's at least half. It may be more than half.
I'll just be Zalatoris. Zalatoris would be
it'd be a good one.
He has a thing though. He's a little too recognizable with all Gilmore stuff. I'm serious. After Masters and the comparison with the Happy Gilmore thing, I think there's going to be something with Zalatoris where he's a little more recognizable. I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe I'm crazy.
With this victory, Cam Smith gets his third career PGA Tour win, his second Zurich victory. Remember, he won this back in 2017 with Jonas Blix, and he also won that event in a playoff.
Playoff.
Now
playoffs.
Thank you. So via Justin Ray, he is the first player to earn each of his first three PGA Tour victories in a playoff since Steve Lowry did it in 1994, 2000, and 2008. It's kind of weird.
Somebody in our comments brought up that if you pick Lou, Rick, I'm sorry, Rick. I don't know why you have to deal with us. I don't know why this is here.
Somebody said
if you pick Louis, you have to deal with back problems forever.
Well, you know, he still ships his. So they were talking about this on the telecast today. He ships his mattress everywhere. And they were talking about how that actually happens. But it's like, there's that one guy on tour who has a trailer from event to event. We, you know about this, right? Am I describing this right? Okay. So I'm assuming the mattress goes in the trailer. He's not actually taking it to like Southwest and asking them to ship it for him. Like it's like part of the trailer.
Maybe he's going to UPS freight deal.
UPS.
Yeah. Me and Greg are locked in right now.
you guys are killing me. Let's see.
Sorry, Rick. What was your question again?
I don't know. I got a couple of Cam Smith. And so that was his third PGA Tour victory. Leishman got his most recent victory at the 2020 Farmers. That was when he missed like every single fairway on Sunday en route to that victory. And then going with the other guys, this would have been Louis' first win on U.S. soil, right? His only win was the 2010 Open Championship.
Which is crazy.
At St. Andrews.
I'm curious about what y'all think about Cam Smith's ceiling. So I just looked it up. He's 27. He feels more like 30. I didn't realize he was as young as he is. Two of his three events are team wins, like Rick said. The other's what, Sony, right? Last year?
Yep. Sony 2020. Right. With Ryan Palmer and Brendan Steele and the win, all that. Yep.
Yeah, it was ugly. It's a good win though. It's fine. It's not like great. What is his, like, what's the ceiling for him?
See, I had this interesting thought. You go first, Rick.
I was just gonna say, how many wins does Billy Horschel have?
Five.
Does
he
have eight?
Eight. That's it.
Okay. Then I would say his ceiling is like 6 to 8 wins.
Okay.
All right. He's 27 years old. He's already got three. He's going to play at least 10 more years. He wins one every other
year. He's got a major in him. Does he have a major in him?
Well, that's what I was getting ready to say. It feels like there's 50 guys whose ceiling is 6 wins and a major.
Mm-hmm. That's probably
right. And not all of them are going to reach that. And I think that's sort of the reality of like, you sort of label these guys early on. And then when they don't pan out, you're like, oh, I did. And it's like, well, no, that was the ceiling. Like that was like the best case scenario. Right. And yeah, I think that's fair. 6 to 8 wins in a major. Are you in on that, Greg?
Yeah, I think he has what it takes to win a major. I think there are certain courses that are going to suit him really well because his game's very specific, right? He doesn't have the Will Zalatoris came up earlier. He doesn't have that kind of ball striking ability, which raises your ceiling. He doesn't hit it like that. He does a lot with short game and putting, which is great, but it limits the number of chances you have to win, which is why 6 to 8 wins is a really nice number for him because you have the ability to be volatile, but win when you get close. When you have a good putting week, kind of like a Kevin Na, you have that ability to close the deal. And he definitely seems to be unafraid. So I think that's a very fair, I think it's a very fair ceiling for Cam Smith, 6 to 8 wins. And I do think he can get a major. I'm not sure where, but an Open Championship seems to be quite fitting for him.
Higher ceiling, Maverick McNealy or Cam Smith?
Cam Smith.
It's not even close.
It might be. McNealy's got a good pedigree.
He was great at Stanford. But
guys already have three PGA Tour wins.
The two of them are team wins.
McNealy's contended once in his life on a course he grew up on.
Yeah, but that twirl on 18 at Pebble was filthy. Aggressive.
That is true.
So you mentioned the team wins. I think this came up, this story kind of is in my head after what happened on the playoff. So Louis hits it in the water immediately and ends the playoff. The drama was over immediately. And for Cam Smith and Mark Leishman, I look at this in a way where you'll always look at a Zurich winner and say, that was a win, but a team event. And there's always that. Yeah. But with that comes along with that. Cause you won't know in 5 years, was this Cam Smith who played really well? Did Mark Leishman carry him that week? You always just have that little wonder whether it's fair or not. But for Louis to hit that shot and lose it on one shot, it's so much more painful to lose it for your partner than it would be if this was the Zurich Classic of 5 years ago, where it was a solo event. If he did the same thing in a solo event, I think it would hurt in a playoff. I think it would hurt a lot less than it did this week. So this has an interesting case where the bad, if you play bad, it can hurt worse because you let down your partner than the good does if you win.
How many wins did McNeely have in college? Do we know?
I think I'm getting him. I think I'm getting his college career confused with, there was somebody that went to Stanford that had like 9 wins.
I think he, Patrick Rogers and Tiger.
Patrick Rogers.
Patrick Rogers. It's definitely
Patrick Rogers is who I was thinking of. He had like, yeah, 9. Did McNeely have that many too?
I think they all had, didn't, no, they didn't.
I don't think so. No? I don't think so.
Yeah. I was looking for any, okay. So he, no. Okay. He won. I can't believe I'm looking at this. He won, once as a senior. He won 1, 2, 3, 4 times as a junior. Oh wow. No, he did win a lot. He won as a sophomore. Yeah, he won a ton. Yeah. Okay.
I think he, Rogers and Tiger all have the same number of wins. I think they all have 11, no?
6, 4, 10. Yeah. That would be right for McNeely. So if he's tied with the other guys, they would have 11.
So that's a good ton. Pedigree, Kyle. I'll give you that.
It's a great
I'll give you that.
Company there.
Notable.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I was looking at McNeely's player projection on Data Golf. I can't believe we're talking about this, but I don't think so. He projects to like Ollie Schneider-Johns, Russell Henley, Graham McDowell, Brandon Grace. So that's pretty good. Let me look up Cam Smith.
It's a really nice
Cam career. Smith. Cam Smith is Harris English, Daniel Berger, Billy Mayfair, Jonathan Bird, Willie Wood, Ryan Moore. So that's probably a little bit better.
Yeah,
I agree. Couple of notables I want to talk about here. Cam Champ and Tony Finau dropped 15 spots on Sunday thanks to their 4 over 76. And Greg, this is probably a good thing, man, because if Finau won this, we would have had to have dealt with the whole he still doesn't have an individual win in America, blah, blah, blah. This would have hurt Tony more than it would have helped.
That's true.
See, I would have, if you're Tony Fina, like it would have hurt him maybe through our eyes. We would have looked at it.
Obviously he would have liked to have won.
Probably had a laugh about it. But if you're Tony Fina and you go in there and you lose, cause they lost this. I mean, they got some bad breaks and they were up against the lip of, I mean, every time we saw them, they were against the lip of a bunker. You saw, and unfortunately on 2 of those occasions, it was Cam Smith in the bunker. So Finau hit it right up against the lip on number 2, which was a terrible break. And then it happened again at number 4. And then it happened again at number 7, although Cam Champ hit it into the bunker at 7, which was a par 5. So it was a really rough start with some really bad breaks. I wonder if this just adds to the Tony Finau Sunday struggles. You go into this right in the mix. You're right there. You're a team that should have a really good chance of winning, and you play your way out of it in the front on the front 9, and you're done basically right away. And you wonder. But I'm looking at Tony Finau saying, is he really cursed? Because you can't, if you end up in the middle of those bunkers that they hit it into, it's not the end of the world. They ended up right up against the lip. And it's like, what can he do? Is this a curse? And I don't know, maybe it is.
Don't say the C word. That's a bad word. But it might be true. Who knows? The guy who broke the Puerto Rico Open curse, Victor Hovland, also with his partner, pretty bad Sunday, KP. The Norwegian 78. They were riding high. They had the magic going for a long time in this event, but it was, I don't know if I saw anything on Sunday. They stopped showing them pretty early. This was bad.
Yeah, Ventura chipped in for par on, I think it was on 16 also. And that was like their best shot of the day. They had like 7 other bogeys before that. Is that right, Greg?
That's correct.
Yes, correct.
So the thing that was concerning to me after you and I talked on round 1, Rick, was I went back and read some of their transcript, because this tournament's hard. It's actually doubly hard because you don't get any of the strokes gained data, and then you can't really tell, like, not only for the team, but individually if who's playing well and who's doing what. So it gets a little, you kind of got to rely on what you've watched, what you've heard, which, you know, Mark is screaming at the radio like, this is what I always do. I get it. I was concerned on day 1 when Hovland said, well, you know, Chris really carried us today and made everything. And it's like, that's like not a, like when Chris Ventura is like carrying you with his putter or whatever, a short game, I guess, that's not sustainable. So I was a little bit concerned after reading that, and it kind of bore out over the weekend, and especially on, what are they, 78 on Sunday?
78.
Yeah, not good.
Greg, the team that I actually thought was the most impressive, and we can do this a lot of different ways, it's the Richie Werenski, Peter Uihlein team.
Yeah.
They were 8 under in alternate shot, but the best by 2 shots, better than Stenson and Rose, 4 shots better than Mitchell and Snedeker, and were 11 under in best ball. So they were almost as good. Only three shots worse in the alternate shot format than they were in best ball. That is, that's good stuff. They played well.
It's extremely rare. I would love to know if there's some data on that. I would bet you that maybe some of the best for a team that contended, I'd bet you that's the best, the closest comparison between best ball and alternate shot. It's just not that easy. So, yeah, fascinating team, and a team, Rick, on Monday, you pointed out because of the Uihlein win, and it turned out to be great. So it was nice to watch that team. It was one of the teams I was wondering how they got together. I guess they do a little practice together at Jupiter Hills, I heard on the broadcast. I didn't know about that. Nice surprise. Jupe life. Jupiter the East. That's East Jupiter.
Did you guys, how would you change the format? Just real quick. I saw an idea on Twitter. Joel Beal, Golf Digest. I thought it was awesome. He said you should throw in worst ball as a day. So you, instead of best ball, you take the worst score. Which would be sick. It would be awesome. And then a scramble on one of the days. So guys are trying to shoot like 53.
Interesting. So you do four different formats.
Yeah.
The other one was on Sunday.
Well, I think worst ball would be insane on Sunday. That's probably true. But No Lane Up said just do alternate shot every day, which I think, I mean, and that's kind of why I thought of it with like the Werenski and Uihlein thing of like, that's actually a great measure of like which team, and I think you just said this, Rick, but which team is actually the best team, right?
Or I think so. Or you could do 2 rounds of modified alternate shot and the other 2 alternate shot. Let them hit their tee shots, then decide which one to use and then play alternate shot from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because best ball doesn't, it has nothing to do with your team. The only thing is maybe you can play completely independent. I mean, unless somebody's hitting it into a hazard or hitting it into trouble off the tee, you may or may not change your club selection. So you basically have the option in better ball to just play completely your own game, and your partner score only helps. Alternate shot is the most intriguing form of team play. It's the only real team play where you need your partner. So I wouldn't mind 4 rounds alternate shot.
Jacob said he wants to go full on charity scramble. Let them buy mulligans. Let them use that string that gets you closer to the hole. Let them cheat. You know, there's always some sandbaggers in those things that are coming in saying they shot, you know, 20. Well,
we already use handicaps at the Tour Championship. So you might as well use them at the Zurich as well.
We've got to talk a little bit of Valspar. We got to do our one and done stuff. But first, there was some sporting outrage, KP. I don't know if you saw this. It just happened before we went hot.
I don't think it was golf related.
Madison Bumgarner completed every inning of his game today for the Diamondbacks and did not give up a hit, but it was only a 7-inning game and it is not officially a no hitter. Your thoughts?
I think that's fair. That would be like, so it would be, I'm trying to think of what a golf equivalent is. It's like when Adam Scott won Riviera after playing 36 holes. It's honestly kind of like, does DJ hold the course record at Augusta National?
Yes.
Because it, and technically yes, but like it's not, you're comparing two different things, right? You're comparing Augusta National in November on what everybody said was a soft course to Augusta National every April since World War II, right? So like, it's a no hitter, but it's not, I don't think it should be an official one. Just like, I don't think DJ's 20 under should be the course record at Augusta.
Okay, I wrote an article for Golf Digest of if that DJ's thing should have an asterisk, and people skewered me for it. So you don't. This is a dangerous road to go down, my friend. But if Major League Baseball is going to say this game lasts 7 innings and this is an official game, and you go out and give up 0 hits, what else does he have to do? It's a no hitter.
Well, yeah,
it's not range fair, shortened.
But I feel like you're trying to. Yeah, that's hard. But like you're almost comparing, like you're comparing a definition of something versus like all the other things that have happened that make up that definition, right? Like all the other no hitters are 9 innings. And yes, it's a no hitter, but it's not a 9 inning no hitter. So you can't put it in this bucket over here with all the other, just call it a 7 inning no hitter and make it a separate record.
Right. He could be I actually think that's better because now he's the first one to ever do it instead of like the 310th or whatever. It's like, he's the only guy to ever pitch a 7 inning no hitter in Major League Baseball.
There should be a November scoring record.
All right. I'll talk to the guys down south about that.
I'll write a letter to Chairman Ridley and we'll get it. We'll get its own like little webpage on masters.com.
God. All right, here we go. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk a little bit about the Valspar next week. We've got to go through our one and done, which there was some movement, gentlemen. There was some movement. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partner.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
And we're back. The Paul Casey Classic kicks off next week, Greg. This is the event that Mr. Casey has won, not one, but 2 years in a row. I went back and looked at the guys who have won the same tournament 3 or more years, and the list, let me tell you, Greg.
Oh, very short. No, Steve Stricker was the last one to do it.
That is correct. What event? You know the event, though.
The John Deere.
Do you know the years?
I think it was 9, 10, 11.
I think it was. I don't have it in front of me, but I thought the last one was 11.
This should count as a trivia win over Greg.
hey, no.
Yeah, Stricker was the last one to do it. Tiger's name is on the list a bunch, but it's a pretty short list, Greg.
Yeah, it doesn't happen very often. It's really a short list of back-to-back, too. It's not an easy thing to do. That's why I typically write off anyone who won the event the year before, anyone who won the week before, because usually you don't get back-to-back winners. You don't get a lot of defending champions. So it's a nice opportunity. What's really interesting is the year that Paul Casey's having. This isn't a, you know, kind of a fluke thing. He really needs to be in consideration for more reasons than just the fact that he won the event in 18 and 19. It's going to be interesting to watch what Paul Casey does this week. Cause again, he's having quite a year and this would be a nice exclamation point.
This is the time before a major championship that we start looking at all the big names scheduling. So we've got Valspar next week. We have then the Wells Fargo Championship, the AT&T Byron Nelson, and then it's the PGA Championship, KP. So this is where at least the studs are trying to figure out, okay, am I playing 1 week? Am I playing 2 weeks? Am I going to play the week before? Probably not. I don't know. But this is where they're all trying to figure out where they're showing up. And this field has, let's see, Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson, Patrick Reed, Paul Casey, Terrell Hatton, Ryan Palmer. Those are the names.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I was actually, Phil's playing also. I think he was a Phil's late ad.
First time since 2004.
That's crazy. That's so long ago. I said this on HQ after Zurich today. This is like the weird, and it used to be worse. It used to be like you wouldn't see guys for like a month, and it's not as bad now because you've got this like rhythm to the majors. But I feel like I think the spring, like if you look from farmers to players, every week was just insane, right? Yeah, not just like the play, but the fields. And when you compare these weeks to those weeks, they just don't add up. And the reason is because you're getting into this, like, okay, I got to figure out a rhythm to hit the PGA, hit the US Open, hit the Open Championship. And I think that's what you're seeing guys kind of jump into now. Whereas guys leading up to the Players were playing everything. I mean, it was crazy. Every week was just like a WGC field. Now you had a bunch of WGCs in there, so that was part of the reason, but, I don't love this portion of the schedule as much as I love that lead into the Players. It just felt like that was more jam packed. And this is more like guys picking their spots, trying to tune things up for PGA or US Open.
Yeah. Here was the lead into the Players. This is wild. So it was Farmers. So there's Torrey. Then you get the Waste Management, you get Pebble Beach, Riviera, a WGC, the Workday, API, and then the Players. That is like unbelievably stacked. And then the lead into the US Open, Greg, this is going to be a little bit different. So we're going to do a PGA Championship. We'll have the Charles Schwab. We'll have the Memorial. Nobody's going to want to miss that. Then a new event, which I assume is going to be the short stick here. That's the Palmetto Championship at Congaree, and then the US Open back at Torrey Pines.
See, this is the Congaree thing is interesting. I think that's a course that's somewhat sought after, but that event, I really thought they should have gone to the West Coast for that, because you're going to Torrey, and if you can get guys to go to the West Coast and play, let's just say Shadow Creek, somewhere out there, it's much easier to go from there to the US Open. It's a much shorter commute. So I thought it was interesting that they went to Congaree, although everything I hear about the place is awesome. But that being said, this time of year, to Kyle's point, there are much more, it's much more consistent player to player. There are events like the Memorial that everybody will play. And because of that, there are events that everybody will take off. And that being all the top guys, of course. So you get more thinned out fields, and then you get bigger events, and the Memorial becomes a really big major championship type feel. And the majors are major championships. So you get great fields in those, but the field becomes more regular player amongst the top guys. Whereas you had to make choices in the spring. You had to say, okay, well, I'm not going to play API as important as it is, or I'm not going to play Genesis, even though it's a great event, because I need to take something off. I can't play this many times in a row leading into a Players and a Masters. So this time of year, you get more consistency.
Mm. Schedule's so good. And it's an Olympic year. It's going to be a ton of fun. Okay. You know what else is fun? A one and done update. Whew. There's a big one here. We'll get to that in just a second. We're going to start where we normally do, at the bottom with the coach. He started with 2.4 million and he ends the week with 2.4 million because KP, he went with Kevin Kisner and Scott Brown. That got him a whopping $0.
They almost finished last, didn't they? At one point, they were in last.
They were. They played better on Friday, but they were close. Tough one.
Yeah, I actually bet against them in a three ball with Thomas Peters and Tom Lewis, I think. So I was hate to see it for Coach, but I love to see it.
Producer Jacob he used Sung JM and Benny on, also got the same result as Coach did, $0. And Greg, that keeps him at 2.8 million. We have just said, you guys now live in the basement. I apologize. You live down there. There's a huge gap to try to catch us, but enjoy.
And it's a little competition between the two of them, and they can figure out who's going to come in dead last. So yeah, they're unfortunately stuck down there, and I don't know what you could, I don't know. I mean, Tiger 2000 would have to come out in order to make up any ground in this case.
You can only use them once, though.
That would be a shame of one and like 2000 one and done. And
no, I'm saying your record, Tiger. Right? Yeah, no, your record. You have the hey, I won four majors in a row.
Yeah.
That's Jacob says, I just need to hit a couple of, winners and I'm back in this thing. Yeah, that's how it works. You do need to hit a couple.
You need like eight in a row.
Now next on this list, is you, Greg. I've not spoken to you this early before because you've been past, sir. More on that in just a second. And you didn't have yourself a bad week. You had the team that finished runner-up, the Eustace and Schwartzel Group. You earned $436,000, which means you have earned $1.1 million in your last seven starts, but you still lost a little ground on the leaderboard.
Yeah, this one, it stings. You can imagine why I would lose coming in second, solo second. Why would I lose ground? Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to talk about that in a second. So I'm going to try to make this as long-winded as possible. But I thought that Louis and Charles were probably the ideal pick for me. I knew they were good friends, but also this is a really risky event because Jacob, our fearless leader, also has a ruthless side to him where you had to have both players available and both players are no longer available after this week. So if you went with Rahm and Palmer, you couldn't just attack. Oh, well, I have Palmer available, so I'll get free credit for Rahm. No, Jacob doesn't let that fly. So that made it a much more challenging pick. One, who do you have available in this super season? And two, if it doesn't go well, who are you okay with missing out on? So anyway, I thought that was a really solid pick, and I was delighted to get into a playoff. But the next part gets a much more bitter for me.
That man right there, Kyle Porter, leapfrogs Greg and moves to $6.4 million thanks to the winners, Cameron Smith and Mark Leishman and KP. I actually think you have a bone to pick here with one, Mr. Producer Jacob, because not only did you have to burn both golfers, you only got half the money, sir.
Yeah, that's crooked, right?
I think it's great, but you have,
it's ruthless. It's cold-blooded.
I understand.
Why do we only get half the? Because those, so what was the number? 1.42?
No, 1.07. So you would have got 2.1 for both of them.
So because
that's like winning the Masters.
Yeah, that's pretty ridiculous.
Figure it out.
Yeah, but you lost Cameron Smith and Mark Leishman. I mean, both those guys contend in the Masters.
I agree that it would be a tough sell to have the Zurich Classic winners in one and done get as much as the Masters winner, but
yeah, but you're burning two guys on. Yeah, I don't know. I would, to be honest, I went into the week not thinking that you would get double the money. So I'm arguing from a position of weakness right now.
That's a good week for you. You're on a pretty good run here. So your last five, you've gotten 2.9, sir.
Listen, a good run for me is just not picking somebody that I picked within the last 6 weeks. So
penalty avoidance.
Yeah, it's been incredible. But yeah, I actually didn't realize that Greg had Charles and Usti. Otherwise, I would have been a little. I was like, oh, they're in a playoff. Like, you know, Smith and Leishman will give me at least something. So I'm very glad that it went that Usti hit the worst shot he's ever hit.
Kyle and I have had some real sweats between one another. And this one could have been, if we had realized it a little more in advance, like the old way we did it with the group chat where everybody knew who everybody had every week, it would have added a little more. And I guess we could have looked at it. I mean, it's published. We could have taken a little more time. So it's on us.
Producer Jacob, can you jump back on? I hit like every bet that I had this week. Have we just stopped doing those? Like, have we stopped, it feels like I start hitting and we stop showing them on the podcast.
Well, I mean, that's partially because we were missing a bunch of them too. So we were swinging and missing too.
we were so bad that we had to stop showing them.
I'm not though. I mean,
also this week we weren't able to get it in with Dottie on the podcast.
That's true.
That's right.
Fine. Okay. Well, does it still count toward our spreadsheet?
It will still count towards your spreadsheet.
Just not yours.
We'll get your points in. We'll account for it.
Okay.
We published your picks on Twitter.
That's right. Okay. They were sent out. They are recorded. Mark remains in second, $6.7 million. So he's about $250,000 clear of KP. He had Sam Burns and Billy Horschel. He got $209,000. And Greg, that means he's on a run of $1.3 million in his last 6 weeks. It feels like he's picking feels like he's picking good guys, but he's not making up much ground. He's been solidly in second for a while.
Yeah, Rick, I mean, you kind of have extended your lead here, and it's getting, you know, it's within reaching distance now for Mark at this point. He's very close to getting where any win and a miscut by you will excel him to the finish. But Burns and Horschel, it's a great pick. It just, it doesn't, your lead is too big. It doesn't gain any ground.
I'm trying to keep everybody in this because my last three combined have earned me $36,000.
Yeah, this is your prevent defense.
I don't even know what that means. I got 17,316 from Chris Kirk and Brendan Todd. 17,316, which I typed into Google and I typed in MSRP. And it came up with a brand new 2021 Chevrolet Trax. Never even heard
never,
of it.
Never heard of it.
That's what I won this week. Never. This car's never
heard of it. Your heater from the time frame I referenced earlier, from the Farmers to the Players, was actually through the Masters, really, was unbelievable. It was almost 6 mil from Farmers through Players.
Yeah, I did some damage there. Yeah. So now I'm just trying to hold on for dear life and hope it's good enough.
It may be. I mean, you get another win. If you get another win, this thing's over, unless Tour Championship includes, unless Jacob decides to include FedEx bonus money. Pool money.
If we include FedEx money, but we didn't double the Zurich pool, then
we're not going to include the FedEx bonus cup money because then that pretty much means the season means nothing whenever someone could hit $15 million.
Hold on. Do we include the PIP? Do we get the player impact money?
And the Comcast business elite top 10 money too. I want that.
I don't think we can do that. I mean, that wasn't disclosed before the season. Both of those things happen mid-season, just like the rules.
That's never stopped you before.
Are they going to make the PIP public? Are they going to actually make the winners of that publicly disclosed?
I hope so.
They have to. It's all about growing the game.
I mean, I look at it kind of in a way where this is what'd you do for the company, right? Who's the biggest, who's our top seller for the company?
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost in a way.
It's a celebration.
Right. It could be like an employee of the month. Who's our employee of the year? And so I think it should definitely be public.
Can you imagine Brooksy hanging a plaque in his mansion and Jupe Life employee of the month for
I don't know if he even has his major championship trophies displayed. It wouldn't surprise me if he does
because he tweeted them at Bryson.
Wasn't really a display. Wasn't that just, they were kind of all next to each other on the ground? Like,
isn't that what a display is?
But they were, it's not like they were in a case. I mean, these are,
I could see him like digging them out of the closet so that he could tweet, just like send that to Bryson. He's like, oh, yeah. Grab those two. Okay. Grab the medals, hang them over the top. Now let's just send this to Bryson.
The reason I say that, I got to tell this story real quick. I parked his car one time and there was something. Yeah. He was at Medalist. I didn't typically valet, but we all helped out. So one day I end up parking his car, and as I back it in, there's something rolling around in the back seat on the floor. Oh, no. And it was a US Open trophy.
No, it was not.
Yes, it was. It was a
US Open trophy. This is not real.
No, I'm not. I would not make
this
that up.
This is slander.
I would not make that up. It wasn't the one that he ends up eventually getting. It was the one that he was basically renting, and it was there, and he knew it was there. I talked to him about it, and he knew that it was there, and there was a reason why he had it with him. So it wasn't completely random, but I'm telling you, it was on the floor of in the back seat of his car.
I'm surprised that Bryson's head wasn't rolling around back there also, since he's renting space there too. Or he was at the time. I don't know if he is anymore. But. That's a great story, Greg. I love that.
No joke. It was the real thing. I couldn't believe it.
I love it. I don't know how else we can end this show, so I'm going to end it right now. For producer Jacob, doing all the hard works, not only behind the scenes, but in front of the scenes today. Thank you very much. Much appreciated. That right there, that's Greg Ducharme. You can find him on Twitter at the real GFD, Kyle Porter. You can find on Twitter at Kyle Porter CBS, and you can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut. And we'll catch you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.